Welcome to Hour 2 of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. Adidas didn't ask for this song, by the way. They didn't. But what happened? The Shell Toes became a cultural icon. You can even still rock a pair of Shell Toes right now in the year 2026. Shell Toe Adidas, suede Pumas with fat laces, oh, all of the things. Those brands never asked for our participation. Now, some brands were much more accommodating and very happy that they found organically a new market. Because, you know, black people are trendsetters. But what I don't like when we set our trends is that we'll take a benign white brand or a European brand and then we'll buy it, put it in our music, and now all of a sudden it's top fashion. I don't like when we do that because we also expect to get some kind of compensation for that. Like, oh, nobody was drinking this before we put it in our music. You owe us royalties. And the company's like, screw you, Blackie. You're the one that got drunk off of Cristal and decided you want to put it in your music. Ain't got nothing to do with us. But Adidas is a damn German athletic wear brand. In fact, we're saying it wrong. The Germans say Adidas. That's how they say it. It's German. Most folks probably didn't even know that. Some of y'all probably thought Run DMC invented Adidas. They did not. Let's talk to D. Hello, D. You're on 101.7 The Truth. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing, Sherman?
I'm doing good.
I've been driving Uber on the weekends for the last two summers. So I'm downtown from 8 to 3 a.m. every weekend. Unless people frequent down there on Brady Street, they really shouldn't have an opinion about what they're trying to do down there to keep their businesses operating. Because it's a mess, let me tell you.
What do you mean when you say it's a mess? Describe the mess for our listening audience. What kind of mess do you see, D?
Well, a lot of the people, they're not even going in bars. They're hanging out on the street. So maybe this bar is seeing that they just have people hanging out in front of the bar. A lot of people are underage, which seems that should be a big problem. They should be giving out wristbands or something to keep underage kids from hanging out down there. There's people fighting. There's shootings on the regular. I mean, it's not just there. Like at State Fair, it just happened. I drove by there Sunday night without even hearing that something happened. I could already tell that something happened just by the people standing in the street. So, like, there's a serious problem in this city. And I think a lot of people are not seeing what's going on. But, you know, I will say that this summer looks a little better than last summer when everyone was down on Water Street. Like, that was chaos down there when they had to bring out the horses almost every weekend.
And you're saying they're not doing that anymore on Water Street? They're not bringing out the horses anymore?
No, because most of the people went to Brady now.
Oh, okay.
And it's a much smaller crowd now.
Gotcha.
Like, it was almost all underage kids down there on Water Street last year.
Okay. Maybe because they took away the food trucks.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be right in the middle of it. It didn't make any sense. Seriously.
All right.
So, let me say one more thing.
Okay.
They have to do something to clean up what's going on down there, because I heard that there's bars talking about not renewing their licenses. You understand? So, unless people are down there and they see what's going on, like, who is complaining about this? Are these actually people who are going out? Or is this somebody trying to be an activist and they think that this isn't racism? This is people trying to save their establishments.
You make a good point.
Sorry to say it.
No, don't apologize.
All right.
Thank you for your call. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, does that deserve more of a critical analysis? If you don't want a certain element, and you know exactly what I'm talking about when I talk about that element, you have it pictured in your mind. And if you don't want that particular element, like a subculture, like a subgenre of African Americans, you know who I'm talking about. The ones that they don't care about somebody else's property. They don't care about their behavior. They will fight anywhere. They'll fight in front of the police. They don't care. Okay. Now that is not all African Americans. We know that. In fact, everybody knows that's not all of us, but that element does exist. If you don't want that element and you make some changes because you can do like a cultural analysis of what that element gravitates toward, maybe it's certain types of food. Maybe it's a particular kind of music. I'll let you do your own analysis, but you can figure out what attracts this element that quite honestly is dangerous and it drives away paying customers. Because a lot of you all are not going to go to a play. Some of y'all won't even go to a particular part of town because that element exists or that element may show up at any point in time. And think about the businesses that are located in said part of town that are absolutely losing revenue because of this element. I want you to really focus on what this element is, and you don't want them around either, okay? You don't want to hang out with them. You don't want to see them coming because they're problematic. If you don't want that element, are you racist? I need you to answer that question. If there is an element that brings danger, treachery, and wanton destruction of property, they don't act appropriately when they're in public. They have a propensity towards being angry and violent. Now, this is not everybody, but you know who I'm talking about. And you don't even have to limit it to a race. You might have a bar somewhere in some other part of Wisconsin that all of a sudden it gets adopted by a motorcycle gang or some bikers or something. And the bar is like, you know, we're just a little small town bar. We cater to the families around here. We have a nice little fish fry out here on Friday nights. But for some reason, this motorcycle gang adopted our bar. You know, we're located right off the side of a highway. And I guess some motorcycle people, I'm just giving you another example. That bar might say, well, we're going to take Waylon Jennings out of the jukebox. Or we're not going to serve Budweiser beer here anymore because that is what this element of people, these motorcycle gangs, that is what they drink. Would that be considered racist? Or would that be a business owner saying, we have to make a different decision about what we are offering because what we were offering was bringing the wrong kind of element? We have to start looking at things through a different lens. If there is a particular element that we know is problematic and troublesome, and we talk about that element all the time because we're trying to figure out what the hell to do with them. Where should they go? Is there education lacking? Like, what do we offer them job training? Do we tell them to get into the trades? We don't know what to do with them. Businesses don't know what to do with them either, besides excise them. So we know exactly what this is about, but we have to stop calling it racism when a destructive element takes over a space, because that's what they do. They colonize a space. And they make other people feel unsafe. Now, again, this is not all people. This is a small subset of people. But we all know this. It only takes one. You can have a wonderful festival where everybody gets together and has a good time and is diverse and people are getting along and they're meeting each other. Because we need places and spaces like that in Milwaukee, because for too long we've all lived in our separate spheres. And when you live in your separate sphere, then generalizations and stereotypes become the rule of the day. But when we have places where everybody can feel comfortable hanging out and maybe the music is very diverse and the people are diverse, you've got Muslims. You know you've done a good job when the Muslims come out. You've got Asians. God bless the Asians. They come on out too, and you have this incredible space where it's very diverse, and then one idiot brings a gun and shoots their gun. Maybe they don't hurt anybody. Maybe they kill somebody, and that's it. It's over. That one person is who you have to watch out for. So if you're a business owner, you got to be concerned about a couple of things. Obviously, the market. What is the economy doing? Do people even have money for your product? You got to be concerned about that. You also have to be concerned about risk. Certain people bring a risk to your business, to your license. And if you have to do things to mitigate that risk, because you know that if this element takes over, then you very well may lose your business and lose your investment. I have known people that have put themselves in permanent financial holes because they took a risk. They were an entrepreneur. They borrowed a bunch of money because they just knew that this was going to be a successful concept. Bar, restaurant, nightclub concept, they will never get out of debt because one person found somebody in their bar, they had a beef with them, and they shot them. That's it. Liquor license not renewed. And they're still on the hook. That's what we don't understand. If you own a bar or a restaurant, you're living on borrowed money for a very, very long time. And the only way in which you can do two things, pay that money back, and then after all the money that you borrowed to redo the kitchen, to redo the interior, to put in new bathrooms, you got to get it up to fire code. You got to make sure it's wheelchair accessible. All that stuff costs money. You might have borrowed $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 so you can have this real beautiful spot that you can call your own, and you open it up, and then some idiot shoots somebody, or you have a whole bunch of fights, and now you lose your liquor license, meaning your ability to repay your debt is gone, and you will never be profitable because you lost your only roadmap to profitability, and that was your license. Wouldn't you want to also make sure that element doesn't harm your investment? Now your wife is leaving you? Oh, yeah, fellas, you think that she won't leave? You think she won't go broke, lose your job? She's the first one that's leaving. First your liquor license, then your woman. And so if you can prevent that element from ending your damn marriage, you can't call it racist. There are several well-documented cases of where a racial or ethnic minority, often through music, street fashion, or youth culture, effectively commandeered the cultural meaning of a brand without the company's permission, sometimes to the discomfort of its executives. And we got to be mindful of this. Sometimes we as black people will find a place, we'll find a space, and we like it. It's new, it's innovative, and it's, you know, something totally different, and we adopt it. And let's say it never catered to black people ever before, but we find it and we just adopt this location. Maybe it's a restaurant, maybe it's a nightclub, whatever it is. But the owners never wanted us in there in the first place, and they tolerate us for a very long time. Then we bring our most sinister element. And we know that when that element shows up, then that business is now in jeopardy. How many of you are willing to sacrifice your life and your livelihood to cater to this sinister element, knowing that they don't care not a damn thing about your business? They don't care. They will tear your business up. They will fight in your business. They will jump behind the bar and throw bottles at each other. Who wants to cater to that? Now, we got to have a real conversation about this now, because when somebody says, I don't want that element in my establishment, what do? We call them racist. And we have done a little bit too much of that. This is in my opinion. Some of y'all are still going to call everything that hurts your feelings or anything that you dislike, or anybody that tells you the truth, you're going to call them racist. We've cried wolf so much about everything being racist that nobody believes us anymore, and nobody literally cares. Nobody cares. Go ahead and file an EEOC complaint right now. See what the Trump administration does with that. No one cares. DEI gone. Affirmative action gone. Nobody cares. Now, we have to understand that criticism should be welcomed. It should be appreciated. Sometimes there are opinions that don't coddle you. Sometimes people tell you the truth, and you got to accept that for what it is instead of trying to shame the person that is being honest with you. Hey, we don't want to cater to this element. We don't want them here because we've seen what they have done. They have left a proverbial trail of tears of all of the places they've gone to, and they've closed this business, they destroyed this business, there was a shooting here, there was a fight here. Who in the hell wants to cater to that? And shout out to the people that do. But even they know they got a shelf life. They know they're on borrowed time before somebody gets shot. That is the city in which we live in. And eventually, people are going to stop offering entertainment to our community. They're just going to stop. One of the Walgreens that closed, was it the one on 27th and North Avenue? They said they're closed. And some of the Walgreens were closing, I thought, because they were oversaturated, because there's a whole bunch of other places where you can get, like, your prescriptions. And whatever Walgreens sells, there's a whole bunch of other places. You can go to, you know, Pick and Saves and Metro Markets, and you can get stuff online, and there's Amazon, whatever. That Walgreens that closed, it was on 27th and North. I don't know if it's closed yet, but they made their announcement that they were closing. They said, our employees don't feel safe coming to work. Can you blame them? How many of you who love your families depend on you for the money that you make and your income, meaning your family wouldn't survive without you? How many of you would be okay going to a place to work every single day? And you remember, you need that job. Now, you got to pay the rent. You got to pay the mortgage. You got to pay the bills. You got to feed your children. But imagine the place in which you work. You don't feel safe. Let's imagine your car has been stolen. You might have been robbed before. can't blame them for prioritizing the safety of their employees. But that's something that we are going to have to deal with. There are consequences, and I told people there's going to be consequences. You're going to see more consequences. You just wait. Wait till the Republicans really get a hold and start involving themselves in this gubernatorial election. You think they're not going to broadcast the images of Brady Street and Water Street and all the mayhem and the chaos that took place in the city of Milwaukee? You know what they're going to say? This is David Crowley's Milwaukee. And it's going to scare these white folks to death. Hell, it scares us to death. We're going to have to deal with it. There will be consequences. So instead of us just talking about it and shaming it, we are all going to feel the consequences of it. Now, do I have a solution for it? Because some of these people are adults. You can't tell an adult not to congregate in a public space. You can't. You can put more regulations, I suppose. Maybe you can put up more rules. You can make some places less pedestrian friendly, I suppose. You can maybe reinforce loitering laws, and you can maybe give out a whole bunch of tickets that, again, will probably never get paid. But there are going to be consequences to this. So I think the smallest part of this is a bar saying we don't want these hip-hop artists being played. We have a much bigger problem that we don't want to deal with, and we can't continue to say the people that don't want to offer this sinister element of our culture. And I'm not saying the other racial groups don't have that sinister element, but I'm not concerned about them. I let them handle their business. We got to handle our business differently because we are the plurality minority in the city of Milwaukee. We got to take a hell of a lot more responsibility for who we are and our image, because if we can't get a hold on this, then people are going to be less likely to offer us opportunities. They are. This is our responsibility. If a bar says, yeah, we don't want to cater to this element anymore, we can't call that bar racist, because here's the thing. That bar can be like, okay, have them at your house then. No, we don't want them over here. We don't want them at our house. So then why should the bar have to cater to them? And then why do we use that gotcha moment? Like, oh, you don't want certain black people at your bar. You're a racist. That's why I offered the lady, Leslie Montemurro, to come on the show. I want to hear her side of the story. I actually want her to be honest and be like, yeah, some of these blacks were messing everything up. We don't want them here anymore. How could y'all get mad at that? Because we would say the exact same thing. But, I mean, coming from a white person, of course, it's racist, right? I'm take a break, come back. I'm going to talk about a couple of brands. This is crazy. Timberland boots. I got three pictures here. Two of them are of Notorious B.I.G. And one, he looks like he's with his crew, and he's standing in front of a liquor store. And then here I got a picture of Tupac, and then I got a third picture of Notorious B.I.G. He's wearing big baggy jeans, a white T-shirt, a big old gold chain, and a red leather jacket. He's holding a cane. And in all three pictures, these men, both Tupac and Biggie, are wearing Timberland boots. Timberland was a brand that was adopted by African-American urban culture, and Timberland as a brand was like, hey, what are you blacks doing? These are work boots. You blacks don't work. Why are you? And they're crazy having some Timberland boots. Like, they're meant to be. I love Timberland boots. I love them. I love the way they look. I love the way they feel. Their quality. I love me some. In fact, you know what I do every single year? I reward myself with a new fresh pair of Timbs. Every year I get me a new pair of Timbs. Steel-toed Timbs, too. So if you got to kick somebody in the nuts, it'll really sting. Now, you got to get you a good steel-toed boot. But I will say this. They make metal detectors go nuts. I learned that a long time ago because I go to a lot of Bucks games. Well, Bucks games oftentimes are in the wintertime. And I go to a Bucks game, I go through the metal detector. Oh, sir, can you empty your pockets? My pockets are empty. Okay, no problem. Go back through. Sir, step aside. We have to wand you. And they wand me. They wand the chest and the belly, and they wand my ass. I don't got a lot of ass now. That's one I'm lacking at. I ain't got no kind of ass. I don't.
I ain't got. Hit the squat rack.
Xavier told me to do more squats. I mean, I don't want that much ass. I don't want to have a voluptuous booty because I might attract the wrong crowd, if you know what I mean. But then they get down to my shoes. And I said, oh, I'm wearing steel-toe boots. Take your shoes off right now! Now I'm imagine at the metal detector, at the damn Fiserv Forum, and I'm standing there in my socks like I'm a terrorist at the airport. So I'm not wearing these anymore. So there you go. But I love Timberland boots.
But Timberland didn't market to us. And they're like, why are you blacks wearing our finely crafted work boot? And then what's crazy is Timberlands are designed to get dirty. But if I have so much of a speck of dirt on my Tims, if I can't clean it, I got to get a new pair. Ain't that wild? I know I'm wasteful, but what can I say? I like what I like. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. We'll be right back.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
Now
this is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
This music's coming back.
Since y'all love old school hip hop so much, maybe I'll just play it on this show. Open up a nightclub. My nightclub would have to be 60 plus, geriatric only. Only thing we're going to serve is milk of magnesia, a little bit of orange juice, ginger ale, wheelchair ramps everywhere, handicap accessible bathrooms, and have a special arthritis section. Talk to someone who would probably be my first customer. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Sherwin.
Bob, I'm worried about you. Let me start off by saying I'm real concerned about you now. I'm worried. We need to get you some help now. I heard you was at the damn casino gambling like a fool sitting there by yourself. I heard you was a one-armed bandit sitting there in front of the damn one-armed bandit. Bob, you don't need to be going to no casino now. You wasting your money.
Yeah, I see my man, JD. I was happy to see him, man. Let me explain.
Oh, please do.
What we went through, what they've gone through, it comes to a conclusion that the consequences of them uprising about institutional racism goes into rap. And they say things that aggravates white people. They just do. And that's why they don't want them in these lounges, because they just saying what, because the consequences is going to jail, getting killed or whatever. So they put it in the rap. Let me say those things. And it's like, it aggravated me when you told Linda, say blacks only. She can say whites or blacks. You know you're not a racist. So if she want to say the good white people and the black people, she ought to be able to say that, Cheryl. You know. And when it comes,
Bob, white folks ain't speaking to her. They ain't saying hi to her. They're not welcoming her. They're not saying good morning to her. Why is she providing grace to people that provide none us? See, we got to stop doing that. We got to stop bending over backwards and be gluttons for punishment to appease white folks. Bob, I don't know what I need to do or what I need to say. They can't stand us. If we are lucky, they tolerate us, but we got to be okay with that. So we think by inviting them to the barbecue and being real nice to them and doing a little shucking and a little jive, oh, yes, sir. Oh, I sure will do that for you, sir. We think that that's going to get us some kind of favor. It is not. We need to be much more concerned about who we are, what we are doing, and the kind of culture that we are putting out to the world. We ain't got to say good morning to white folks, because they sure enough ain't saying good morning to us.
Sherwin, there's integration whether you like it or not. White people are marrying black people, and black people are marrying white people. And you're not a racist, so you can forget.
I never said that I was, Bob, because I want to protect my culture and my people from the evils that for some reason we don't seem to recognize. I don't know what more needs to happen to us. We don't got to be accommodating to them, because they're not accommodating us, and I don't care who marries who. They ain't got nothing to do with it. You can marry whoever you want to. You can date whoever you want to. At the end of the day, Bob, they still prevent our success. So we ain't got to say good morning to them. They ain't saying good morning to us. They're not inviting us to their barbecue. All right, Bob, let me ask you this. When's the last time a white person invited you to a barbecue?
Sure.
When I lived the last time. 1960 what? When was the last time, Bob? When's the last time you had some potato salad with raisins in it, Bob? I need to know. Give me a date. When?
Sherman, that white producer you got, he's one of them good white people.
Bob,
you
I don't know, Bob.
You're not a racist.
I don't have a white producer, Bob. Where did you even get that from?
Okay.
Oh, good.
Give you an example, Sherman.
Go lay down. Now you take your medicine.
There was a white woman that I used to gamble with.
On a regular basis.
On a regular basis. You know, I didn't mess with her. She didn't mess with me. And she gambled at a lounge near her house in Waukesha. She said she hadn't seen no blacks until she was 20.
Bob, what the hell was you doing with her? You gonna get lynched?
Gambling. I talked to her, and then all of a sudden we started gambling together once in a while whenever I went, you know, because she was cool. And she was, you know, she was a white woman.
Did you go pick her up? Did she come? How did y'all get to the casino? Did you meet at the casino that you used to go pick her up?
She drove her car. I drove my car, Sherwin. Let me finish this quickly. The white woman, she gambled at the lounge next door or a block down, and they had a few machines there, and so she gambled there and won some money, and they wouldn't give it to her right then. They gave it to her later. So we gambled together, and I was taking her to that place where she picked up her money, and she said, no, you don't. I don't want you to go in, because I was going in with her. And I said, why not? And she said, no, I just don't want you to go in. Because they're probably saying the N-word and saying all kind of things. People need to interact with people. And she had a tooth rack. And I was in the mood. And I said, let me move upstairs to your tooth rack. She wouldn't let me. Because her neighbors would tear her up.
Bob, you're trying to move in with the white gambling lady.
Up at the top floor. I'm not messing with her. You know,
Bob,
she had
hold
a tooth
rack. Bob, why was you trying to move into the apartment with the white lady?
Because I was going to move from this place because they had mice. And I was going to move. And so she wouldn't let me because her neighbors would tear her up about a black person. You know, she's a
Bob,
good
you're literally
white
proving
woman.
My point. This woman wouldn't let you go into the place to collect the gambling money. You wanted to move in with her, and she says no. That means that you weren't wanted, Bob. You were not wanted. You got evidence of that on more than one occasion. Now, continue your story. Where the white woman at now? You still be gambling with her?
No. She's gone in a nursing home. I don't know if she's dead or whatever. I feel bad because she was a little older than me.
You better check on her.
Check with her. She didn't want me to get in any kind of aggravation, and she didn't want to get in any aggravation. You know, so
Bob, I need you to understand what you just said. You know what the aggravation is? That you were born black. How is that not offensive to you? You're not offended by that? That she couldn't take you certain places, or she didn't want to be seen with you, and you certainly couldn't live with her because you are black. Why are you accommodating somebody like that? Now, I get it. Y'all used to gamble and have your little fun. But at the end of the day, she made it clear you were not welcome nor wanted in some of her spaces.
Here's how it is, Sherman. I went to one real estate because I wanted to buy in Bensonville. They said, why don't you buy in Maywood or Bellwood? I left. I didn't even say nothing. I went to the second real estate person. They said the same thing, and I just left. I didn't pay it no mind. They were racist. I didn't pay no mind. The third was a white guy from a real estate. He said, yeah, I'll get you that place. And he got me that place. And it was very expensive. I was only 22. I don't pay no mind racism. I just, you know, I'm fortunate because in the wrong place at the wrong time, I could get killed or I could
Bob,
get hit.
Bob, that's exactly what your naivete, well, I think it's very sweet and endearing. When these people are trying to tell you something, it is in our best interest to listen because we know that we're very nice people and we treat everybody with dignity and respect, but that doesn't matter to them. They still don't want us around.
I can't be like them, Sherry.
Nobody's asking you to be like them, but sometimes when the writing is on the wall, we need to read it. That's all I'm saying. How accommodating we will be to them blows my mind, and let me tell you why. Because black folks won't even be that accommodating to other black folks. If I'm lying, I'm dying.
I don't pay it no mind. No, I couldn't go into the bar with her. Why he trying to live with her? This something's going on there. I don't like that. That was something weird now. At some point, you probably should say, maybe we shouldn't hang out anymore, Mary. Maybe if... Okay, that's... Was he trying to prove a point? Well, I guess he ignores racism. Sometimes we're lucky enough to get a warning. Other times we are not. And if you are getting the warning, they're not kidding. If somebody says, hey, stay in the car, you're not welcome here. Here's what you got to ask yourself, okay? Why are you with a white person that is segregating you? Because that white person be like, you know what? No, Bob, if you can't come in, then I'm not coming in here either. No, I'm not going to frequent this. That's what the white woman should have did. She said, no, you keep your black ass in the car. No, I'm going to go in here. These are my people in here. Why would you want to hang out with a white person that makes excuses for other racist white people? Now, her and Bob found some kind of little connection. They both were little addicted gamblers, which is kind of sweet. She was older than him, so I'd imagine she's probably 200. She probably owns slaves if she's older than him. But wouldn't that bother you if your white friend says, no, you stay in the car. You're not welcome in here. Then you shouldn't feel welcome in there either. That's just the standard that I have. I wish one of my white friends would tell me to stay in the car. Sure, we're going to go to this restaurant and have dinner. Here, you stay in the car. We don't think it's a good idea if you come in there. I'd have to ask them, well, why do you think it's a good idea to eat there? If I'm not welcome and I'm your friend, I'm someone you spend time with, but you are telling me you're going to hang out with people that don't like me, well, then you probably don't like me either. No, it's not like that, Sherwin. It's just, you know, well, they're going to use the N-word. Are you going to say something to them about their use of the N-word? Well, no, I'm not going to do that. Us being accommodating to them has never helped our cause. What it does is it shows submission. And when black people submit and we're overly accommodating to them, they have no motivation to change. It's very, very simple. All right? Okay, then. Everybody happy? Bob thought, he must have thought, when was the last time we even had a white producer? I've never had one. So temporarily, I had Andrew for like, Andrew maybe produced two of my shows.
Okay. Apparently I'm white.
Bob didn't take his pills. That's, you can't. And he's getting worse. Eventually we're going to have to stop taking his calls. Because the fact that real estate agents steered him. Maywood's a black neighborhood in Chicago. And he said, oh, I didn't pay it no mind. Wouldn't you want to find a black real estate agent at that point? I'm just saying, if they're trying to steer you, which, by the way, what they did was illegal. And maybe I'm different because I can't be too accommodating to someone who will disrespect me in front of my face. All right, I'm going to take a break, come back. Timberland boots. I can't stop buying them. I got to have them. But Timberland never wanted the black customer. Well, too bad you got one. Because they're a nice boot. Xavier, do you have any Timberlands?
I have never owned a pair of Timberlands.
Oh, great. Now I'm over here buying Timberlands and driving a Tesla. Look at me. Yikes. The Tesla, I have no regrets. None. Every time I put it in self-driving, Tesla, take me to the restaurant. Aye, aye, Captain.
I'm getting rid of Starlink.
You don't like it?
Uploading processing is very slow, like dial-up slow.
You know what it's for? It's for like rural, remote areas. In the city, you have a lot of options for internet, but it's for people. So they have one they offer where I can have it in my car, where I can have high speed. I don't travel that much. Like if I'm traveling, you know, from state to state doing a bunch of road trips, then it might make a lot of sense. But yeah, if you live in an urban area, you have a lot of options for internet. But I'm glad that you tried it. Because you're saving me from having to get it. All right, let's take a break, shall we? The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. We'll be right back.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Always at night. Sometimes they come out between 9 a.m. and noon Monday through Friday on 101.7 The Truth and on the YouTube on 101.7 The Truth. That's when the freaks come out. LT says, what is our motivation to change? Businesses will change the music, the food in order to keep their establishments, but black folks will keep acting a fool at the next establishment. So here's the thing. You don't have to change at all. You can be exactly who you are. Black folks can continue doing whatever it is you're doing. My thing is, don't go where you're not welcome. I'm not in favor of, now obviously violent behavior needs to stop no matter who the person is. But I think black folks have this fantasy of the good Negro and the model minority in our mind. We think that if we follow their rules and if we act as they do, we talk the way they do, we dress the way they do, and we follow all of the rules that they prescribe, all you were doing is you were acquiescing to white supremacy. And sometimes you have to, right? Because it's their colony that we live on. But the model minority is a myth. Because even if you are successful, they're going to question your success. So even if we follow all the rules and we do everything we possibly can to make white folks feel comfortable, at best, they're tolerating us. But here's the thing with us, because we believe that if we follow those prescribed rules, because we have been bombarded by their rules since our inception into this country. It has been nothing but their rules. And we think that if we just follow them, they're going to accept us. No, it's tolerance. Because I can give you an example of a model minority that you would think would have changed their minds. And his name is Barack Obama. They hated him. They hated him so much. Look where the country is right now because of Donald Trump. So I want you to listen to me. Listen to me good. Even if you follow all of the rules and you reach the pinnacles of what you believe is success, they're going to look at all of the measures that were put in place that you may or may not have taken advantage of to reach your success, and they're going to take them away. College used to be damn near free. In fact, the University of California system used to subsidize university education like they subsidize high schools and middle schools until black people started getting educational opportunities and had to be legally accepted into colleges and universities. Now they're going to make you go into debt forever if you want a higher level of education. We had affirmative action signed into by executive order with John F. Kennedy, March 9th, 1961, Donald Trump just took that away. They've gutted the Voting Rights Act because our own political sovereignty, I could argue, has helped black people get a fair shake, get more opportunities, get more government contracts, et cetera, et cetera. Damn near all of Atlanta, including their airport, was built by nothing but black contractors. So if black people have voted their way into success, take that away too. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. There have been a lot of businesses and companies and corporate boards that have overlooked black people, or they've been outright racist in who they select to lead and to run their companies. Let's have a focus on making sure that black people get a fair shake. We get too much of a fair shake. We get too many opportunities, and now all of a sudden they're taking DEI away. I'm trying to give you an example, because we think that if we just follow their rules and do everything by the book like they say, that they're going to love us. They never will. They're literally trying to run from us. They've closed shopping malls, grocery stores, pharmacies. Best example I can give is Olive Garden. You guys remember when Olive Garden was in Brown Deer? On like 76 and, what is that? No, not 76, like 85th and Brown Deer Road. Used to be a little Olive Garden over there. Oh, you niggers. They moved to Menominee Falls. They just went further away. They just...
Well, that's because that whole strip mall died, though.
That Olive Garden was the only thing over there for more than a decade. It didn't die with the strip mall. That Target had been closed. Everything, Mr. B's was over there on 86 in Brown Deer, but that Olive Garden was just hanging on. No, we're gonna
going to still hang out in Brown Deer. And they're like, nah. The Walmart on 76th and Servite, they're like, no way. We're getting out of here. We're going to move into Brown Deer. I'd argue it's worse. But we don't get it. The best we can get is tolerance, or they try to manipulate us. Because what we do as black people, if we find out a white person has been nice to us and gives us an opportunity, we make them like cultural icons. We elevate them. White person opens up a business in the black community to serve underprivileged people, we give them a damn Nobel Peace Prize. But sometimes they manipulate us and take advantage of us. Like, let's start a black business because we want black people. Or we'll be a white investor and say, oh, we want to offer a business or a job opportunity to a black person. And they'll do so with sinister intentions. You think I haven't seen it in media? You know how many times I've been kicked around and shuffled around? You know how many times I consider myself a radio host, but for some reason I just find myself on black-centered stations. Okay, fair enough. You guys know the story of the previous 101.7 before Good Karma had it. Two white boys that had a radio station on Brady Street. Two white liberals from Madison hired Earl Ingram first, and then they hired me. With the expectation of, because I heard it out of their mouths, well, Sherwin, we brought you and Earl over here. Well, how come all the black businesses are not spending a bunch of money advertising on your black radio shows? And then eventually what happened? Gone. Don't get me started on Good Karma Brands. It's too soon for that. I'm still in their space now, but I got a whole bunch of stories to tell you about that. Oh, we also come to find out that Good Karma Brands has now changed their name to Good Karma Sports. Did you hear about that, Xavier? They've just rebranded.
Oh, no, I didn't know about
that. Now they're Good Karma Sports now, because that's what their focus is going to be. Shout out to the people over at TMJ, because I know their days are numbered. How are you going to be Good Karma Sports and then still have one surviving talk radio brand? So I think the writing is on the wall for them, too. But there was an attempt. Let's start 101.7 The Truth. I don't think they believe that The Truth would become what it became in a really short amount of time. Do you know how long it takes for a brand new media outlet to actually penetrate and have some kind of worth and value? We was on fire after like 18 months. The problem, though, is that Good Karma Brands had one particular way of looking at marketing and advertising and did not have the cultural competency to understand the black community and our listenership and the way that we interact with our media. They had no concept of that whatsoever, and it was foreign to them. And next thing you know, we're sold. That's all right, though. We're cool with Milwaukee black media. We're doing okay over here so far. Take a break, come back. Timberland boots! Timberlands! Didn't want you blacks to adopt their brand. There's a whole bunch of other brands as well. Liquor brands also. Sometimes we're not wanted, but we may believe in our heart of hearts that if we accept them for all of their flaws and all of their racism, institutional and structural, if we just forgive them and we're accommodating to them and we follow their rules, maybe, just maybe, they'll love us. They never will. The best we can get is tolerance, and even that has a shelf life. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. I'll be right back.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
So you're a philosopher?
Yes. 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 I think very deeply. I think very deeply. I think very deeply. I think very deeply.
In about 4 seconds, a teacher will begin to speak.
I think very deeply.
Let us begin. What, where, why, or when? Will all be explained like a structure?
Locked and Lovely says via the YouTube chat. Yep. Look how whites started treating Asians, the model minority group, especially after COVID came on the scene. Ooh, that's a good example. Asian people adopted a lot of white supremacist philosophies. A lot of Asians don't like us as black folks. because they thought and they believed that they were a little bit closer to whiteness, and they really follow the model minority myth. If they just do everything right and they don't get in any kind of trouble and they stay very quiet and they stay in the background and they get a great education, that they will be accepted. Till COVID came, we called it a damn China virus. That's not very nice of them. But that's how they are. They're exceptionally deceptive. Ladies and gentlemen, white supremacy is deceptive, and it's also very elegant. It's supposed to make you think it's not there. They will let just enough of us in so they can still be familiar with who we are and how we operate and still be familiar with our culture enough just so they can start the next generation on marginalizing black people. They bring us in, and we think that we're welcome. And they'll use us as examples. Like, look at this black right here. Look at this. Look how perfect they are. They got married and stayed married. There's no baby mama, no baby daddy here. This one went to college. This one is a lawyer. Look at this. Look at this. All of you other blacks, be just like them. And then at the end of the day, whoever these black people are that followed all the rules, you're still not going to get the promotion. You're still not going to be named chairman of the board. You're still not going to be the CEO, but they will use you as an example. That's how it works. It's very, very deceptive because so many of us, I think, are conditioned to believe that for them to be racist, they actually have to hate us and say the N-word. No. They have evolved from that. The new racists love being around black people, listen to our music, adopt our fashion. They do all the things because they're trying to better understand how they're going to reinvent white supremacy and white nationalism so they can continue to do what they have been doing. Because I would argue over the last 500 years, it's worked really, really well for them, not so well for us. So they have to continue to evolve. Some of us think that racism stopped and it ended with Jim Crow. I would say it got renewed after Barack Obama because they realized that they had to retool. And Trump was like, no, hire me. I'll be your retribution. Every now and again, you got to be mindful of this. Richard Nixon did it in 1968. Richard Nixon convinced racist, segregationist, pro-Jim Crow, Democratic Southern states. So you know the traditional red and blue map that we have now in presidential contests? What is now red used to be blue. Nixon was like, look, I'll make you all a deal, Southern states, because I need your electoral college votes in order for me to be president. And a lot of the Southern Dixiecrat Democrats were very angry at Lyndon Johnson, who was the successor to JFK, who really was the one pioneering the civil rights legislation from the presidential executive Oval Office. It was Kennedy. But then Kennedy had a bit of a bad day in Dallas. He lost his mind, and you know how that goes. So Johnson was like, well, the least I can do is continue this man's legacy. And Johnson did. Johnson was from Texas and very much a Dixiecrat himself, but Johnson knew he was doing the right thing and he was staying in the legacy of his predecessor, which was John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And the Southerners were very angry that one of their own was now forcing them to integrate and forcing them to have to hire black people. They can no longer legally discriminate because of a number of different acts that were passed, including Voting Rights Acts and Civil Rights Acts, Fair Housing Acts. All that stuff came in the Johnson administration. So the 1968 presidential campaign comes up, and Nixon was like, look, I know I'm a Republican. I know we're the party that 100 years prior we freed the slaves. But Nixon said, I'm going to reinvent a new kind of racism because we can't do it the old way. We can't say no niggers allowed. We can't say whites only. Can't do that. That's all illegal. We'll do something new and innovative, and we will continue this great winning streak of white supremacy in the United States of America. We'll have a war on drugs. And people are like, wait a minute, how was that going to work? Nixon was like, trust me. Reagan doubled down on it. And so I just want you to look at the evolution of when it was overt and it was Jim Crow, and then the Jim Crow era ended, but a new form of racism came in. And there was some benefit, at least temporarily, for black people because we were getting more chances. We were getting more opportunities. We were looked at a little bit differently. More colleges and universities were welcoming us, even though we're going to be paying more for tuition because tuition used to be free. The only reason why college is so expensive right now is the same reason why we don't have universal health care. Stop thinking that a damn socialist is going to get you universal health care. Presidents have tried universal health care in the United States since the early 1900s. And you know what has stopped it? The fact that black people would qualify for it, too. You know what that means? Nobody gets it. Look at the countries that have it. They're homogeneously white, or they're usually all one race. very few countries of diversity, especially the kind of diversity the United States has, have universal health care, because you don't want your most marginalized, your poorest, and the minorities that you hate to be able to get universal health care, because that will make sure that we remain competitive. That's why we don't have it. No damn socialist is going to get it for you, because this is a racist country. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be back for hour three.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.